Have you ever got into a discussion that you wished you had never started? Once you realise you're on opposite sides of a big emotional divide, it can be hard to resolve that conversation with dignity and respect on both sides. But it shouldn't be hard, our guests today say, even for those hot button topics and even if your competitive spirit kicks in. Dr. Luara Ferraccioli and Dr. Samuel Spall are ethicists from the University of Sydney, and they say we could all be better at disagreement. Luara, Sam, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I was reading the notes from your upcoming talk at the Ethics Centre in Sydney, and one of the polls is, should Luara and Sam be worried about their relationship based on what we've been discussing today? So it's really great that you guys have put into practice some of these abstract concepts about how you argue better. Let's start with where we're living now. Luara, how contentious an era do you think that we're in at the moment in Australia?
Well, I think we've always had difficult discussions about hard questions, right? We've always disagreed. We've always, held different political and moral and religious positions that made us, arrive at different conclusions. But I think with social media, we are getting worse at disagreeing. We are not being very respectful. We are not being charitable to our opponents. We are assuming that they're coming, we're not always assuming the kind of the best version of their views and disagreeing well. So I think social media is just making public discussions about important questions more difficult.
Is that because more people have access to it, not just the people who've been trained in rhetoric and philosophy, but everybody, no matter what school they went to or what educational theories they were exposed to, and they might not have access to the kind of rules about good arguments?
Yes, I think that could play a role. I think not everyone learns about debating at high school. Not all high schools have debating programs, for example. That is definitely something that could help if more high schools trained young people to disagree well. But I don't think that's the full answer. I think the way social media enables discussions, the way it's all short and, you're not looking at each other, you're not seeing that sometimes your opponent is generally trying to have a good faith discussion, but it's so short, you misinterpret. We all have had that with emails or texts, right? That after we talk to someone, we realize that we misunderstood what they were trying to say because it was so short and quick. So I think there's more happening, but certainly with debating program at all high schools in Australia, we would as a country do a better job of disagreeing well.
I think if I may, that Luara just made a really important clarification and sort of extension and deepening of the point. So a lot of people like to talk about social media and political polarization and its impact on how we disagree. And I think that's crucial, but it's much broader and deeper. I think it has to do with huge changes to the way we receive information and seek it out, to the way we communicate, to the way that we sustain human relationships. I mean, so many of the ways we relate to other people now are, for example, mediated by screens and by small bits of text. And I think that has to be plumbed a bit more rigorously because that really changes the way that we think and communicate.
Well, and when we talk about how we communicate, let's look at some of the good and bad ways to do that. Sam, what are the hallmarks of a bad disagreement? What's happening for people? What are they doing?
Yeah, so some of the hallmarks of bad disagreement, I would say, are lack of charity, right? Like presenting your interlocutor as an opponent. And I mean, even if you want to present them as an opponent, presenting what they're saying in a, not a flattering light. I think one of the lessons we're going to try to bring to bear in this talk at the Ethics Center is that there are some interesting things that we do in philosophy and at a university when things are going well, at least, that we might productively export to other kinds of conversations. One of the things we try and do is apply a principle of charity to all conversation. So try to reconstruct the best, most plausible, most compelling, most interesting version of the thought that your conversational partner or opponent, if you like, is having. And I think the principle of charity is related to a lot of other important principles of disagreeing well, like, you know, a kind of principle of intellectual humility, perhaps, understanding that even my most cherished beliefs could be improved, or the network of beliefs that sustain them could be better justified in my own mind. And one of the ways that I can come to a better justification for my own views is really being humble about them and listening to other people.
And Sam,
so that's a beginning.
I note that you once taught philosophy in correctional institutions for a period of time. What was
Indeed,
it like?
Some...
I'm just wondering, when we look at that idea of, you know, not being too attached to the idea of winning, but the idea of having a good argument and an intellectually rigorous argument, what was it like talking to people who might have grown up in circumstances where winning was pretty important and you might not have been too fussy about the methods?
Well, I taught in several correctional facilities, including some maximum security facilities in New York State. It was one of the best experiences of my life. That's the easy answer. But, I mean, what was it like with respect to how these people were? Well, they were actually incredibly passionate about and engaged in the project of improving themselves. And so they were delighted to be confronting a person like me who made no bones about the fact that I thought they were wrong when they were wrong and they were right when they were right. So I think they really respected and valued an intellectual challenge because they were so committed to the project of self-transformation in a way that I think is pretty unsurprising when you think about the circumstances in these prisons.
Yes, indeed. And it's inspiring when I think about some of the discussions I've had about who should do the dishes on a particular night, for example, that if you strip back the emotional investment and the investment in winning and just look at it as a pure intellectual exercise, I'm sure it would be quite different. Luara, how do you do that, though? I mean, isn't it necessary for someone to win sometimes in particular arguments?
Yes, I think some arguments require that someone wins, but you want to win well, right? You want to win because you have the best argument, not because you've put your opponent down. And I mean opponent in a broad way. It could be your partner. It could be someone you're having a disagreement with, or your colleague, or a fellow student, or a fellow politician in parliament. So sometimes you need to make a decision, right? You need to get to a point where something, where you need to move beyond that disagreement. And so you need to settle it, as it were. And so sometimes that requires that someone wins, but you want to win well, and you want to win not because you've put your opponent down, but because you were capable of adequately articulating your views in a way that it's so compelling that they can at least see why it should go your way.
Well, one of the examples that you're using in your talk is you've got two people, they've got kids, and one of them wants to send the kids to a public school and one of them wants to send their kids to a private school. And we've recently had this huge discussion about education and the kind of theories and values that underlie it here on this program. Luara, what do you do if your interlocutor's values are so different from your own? Can you resolve such a disagreement?
Yeah, so this one is interesting because it's actually a disagreement I have with my partner. We both committed to public education. We want our children to go to public education, but I'm at least open to sending my kids to private school if they're really not happy in the public school system. I mean, they're still quite young. We're talking about high schools here. And I'm just thinking, you know, not so much that they would be unhappy with the education they're getting, but perhaps they're having trouble making friends or anything like that. Just, I think we should be open about the possibility. And because he went to a public school system his whole life, whereas I went to a private school back in Brazil where I grew up, we had different experiences. We both think that we had the best experience. And so we have this disagreement, but it's always very respectful. We talk about, you know, we try and recognize why we're disagreeing, why it's so important to him, why I'm a little bit more open to private schools. And I think one reason is because, say, if you grow up in Brazil, the social network, the social capital is so important. Having the right connections, right? Knowing people who can open up opportunities can make such a difference. You don't have the government there giving all the support. Whereas here in Australia, there is a welfare state. We lack that in Brazil. And so you can be a little bit more autonomous in your life. And I think that's one reason we have this disagreement. I'm a little bit more anxious about their future than he is. He thinks, they'll be all right. He grew up here and he knows there are all these institutional support for them, even when we are no longer in the picture. So we try and recognize why we're having this disagreement, try and see where we both want similar things, right? And we care and try and identify what it is that we both care about and then see if there is a compromise. I mean, I think a compromise here might be that we are just going to support them in whatever choice they make. That could be a way of none of us getting our way, but in some way resolving it. But, it could be that one of us will end up convincing the other. And then as parents, we are, I like to think, entitled to also make the decision rather than leave it up to them.
Well, interestingly, Sam Spoll is who we're hearing from today. Dr. Luara Ferraccioli and Dr. Sam Spoll, both senior lecturers at the University of Sydney, and they're going to be involved in a talk at the Ethics Centre in Sydney on Thursday. It will be in person and also live streamed online, so you can catch it in various ways. We'll put the details up on our website. But a lot of people are very happy to leap into disagreements these days, especially on social media, as you pointed out earlier. Sam, what are your thoughts on the idea of agreeing to disagree? You just go, this disagreement is not worth having. I'm not going to get involved.
Well, some disagreements are indeed not worth having. I think, if someone says to me that, women and men are just different, and so it's completely fine for women to get paid less money for exactly the same work, that person has some fundamental commitments that I don't share, and I might be skeptical about my ability to convince them, though I might try. But I would say that the phrase agree to disagree, I think, is a kind of funny, interesting one that it's worth thinking about. I mean, I think that phrase is usually employed in a way that, we often employ phrases like, it's all subjective anyway. Well, agree to disagree, or everyone has their opinion or something like that. Not as a real move in a conversation, but as a kind of ending of a conversation. And sometimes we need to end a conversation because it's just not a productive disagreement. We've tested the waters and we're not getting anywhere. But sometimes we employ locutions like that, I think, to kind of paper over our own lack of comfort, our own insecurity about the fact that we no longer have anything to say to defend our views. And so we could be a bit reflective, perhaps, about that tendency.
Indeed. And just finally, Dr. Luara Ferraccioli, a lot of people in Australia say, look, we've got these adversarial systems for politics and the legal system. Those are our role models. How do you say things could be better if we learn to have better disagreements on the big and the small stage, I guess?
Yes. I mean, I think politicians really should try harder to disagree well. I think a lot of people were kind of no longer following politics, partly because they are so disappointed at how politicians are conducting important political debates. It looks like they are much more interested in humiliating their opponent, scoring a political point, rather than having a, battle of ideas. And these are the people charged with that. They're in charge of this enterprise. We are in it together, right? We as a community have to pursue our own political future, the best political future for this nation. We need our politicians to have important, difficult discussions about the things that really matter. And if we see them basically just trying to score points and humiliating one another, then we don't have any confidence that we are you know, giving our best here, and that's really disappointing. So they need to do better, much better than they're doing now.
Well, I hope they're taking notes just like I am for my next discussion about the dishes. Pure rhetoric only. It's been really lovely chatting with you today. Thank you so much for your time, Sam and Luara.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Luara Ferraccioli, Senior Lecturer in Political Philosophy at the University of Sydney. Dr. Sam Spoll, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Philosophy at the University of Sydney. And their discussions, The Ethics of Disagreement. The details are on our website of where you can access that.